Being Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Robbie Stanley, Jake Lyman, Connor Newt here with you on this Thursday morning. I got some tickets to give away. A four-pack of tickets to the FIFA Club World Cup match coming up tonight at Geodis Park. We got Al Hilal taking on CF Pachuca at 8 o'clock. Connor Newt, big Pachuca fan, as he just talked about in the break.
I can't wait.
Be calling number 3, 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Caller 3 will win a four-pack of tickets to the FIFA Club World Cup match coming up tonight at Geodis Park. So make sure you get in on that. We got a lot of things to get into this hour. We will get back into the Predators a little bit later in the hour. But, Jake, I want to start on a little bit of a conversation that we had that I had with Stilly yesterday on Jared versus Joe. Now, he was approaching it through the lens of the off-season program that the Titans have run and how Brian Callahan has put the emphasis on leadership, and they're doing all these competitions and games, and you know, it does have, you know, maybe a little bit of a duck-duck-goose feel to it, but it's fine. I don't really have a huge problem with it. And it was OTAs and minicamp when we're talking about all this. And at the end of the day, in my opinion, what happens in OTAs and minicamp really doesn't matter all that much to me. I mean, last year in OTAs, we were talking about how well, like, J.C. Latham was moving the Olga and Bertha tackle dummies that Bill Callahan put out there. And by the time the end of the year came around, they apparently decided that they didn't want him playing left tackle anymore and wanted him playing right tackle. You know, we were talking about Tavondre Sweat and like, well, I just don't know that he's going to be in good enough shape. And then he ended up being fine throughout the year. He was in good shape. He played all those things. So I think there's a limitation on what things that happen in OTAs and minicamp actually mean. I kind of approach it this way. And, you know, he's a 3-14 head coach right now until proven otherwise. I understand, and we have talked about in great detail, the idea that it would not seemingly be good for Cam Ward if you get through his first year and you remove the coaching staff out from underneath him and you start that cycle of different coaches, different offensive systems, different offensive coordinators that early in Cam Ward's career. We've seen that happen in the NFL. It's usually not a very good thing. If you want your quarterback to succeed, the hope should be that there's some stability there with the head coach. Now, one thing I've also said is you can't do stability just for the sake of stability. If Brian Callahan, by game 10 this year, points out, it's just clear that he doesn't know what he's doing and he's not a good head coach, well, that's also detrimental to Cam Ward. And I'm just looking back through this, and we've talked about this earlier in the offseason, but it is kind of remarkable how often teams that have the first overall pick and end up taking a quarterback fire their head coach the next year. Like, it happens all the time. Now, I will say, like, the chief offender of that is the Chicago Bears. You know, they haven't been first overall picks.
But yeah,
other than Caleb Williams.
Trubisky.
But Trubisky, what was he, second? I think he was number two.
Justin Fields.
They fired the head coach that first year. Justin Fields, head coach got fired his first year. And then, of course, last year, Caleb Williams and Eberflus gets fired after that debacle on Thanksgiving. If you go back and look at it, it happens a lot when teams draft a quarterback really high or even first overall and their coach gets fired like the next year. So history's kind of working against Brian Callahan that way. Jake, I still look at the roster and I can identify a whole bunch of holes that this Titans team has. So I guess my question to you is, like, is Brian Callahan doomed before this thing starts heading into year two as head coach of the Tennessee Titans?
I think doomed is a strong word. I don't know if he's doomed because I think most of what Brian Callahan is going to be judged on is how good is Cam Ward. If he can develop Cam Ward and have him looking like an offensive rookie of the year candidate, then even if you go 6-11, I don't think he's going to get fired because there are a lot of holes on the roster. And I think, at least in what they've said, the Titans are trying to be more patient. And so I've said to Connor on our Saturday show plenty of times, I don't think the win total is necessarily the most important thing for Brian Callahan this year. But if 5 games in, Cam Ward looks lost out there, The Titans aren't going to blame Cam Ward. They're going to blame Brian Callahan. So that is what I am a little concerned with Brian Callahan, is he didn't develop Will Levis last year. Like, Will Levis looked worse, much worse, in his second year than he did in his rookie season when, again, we only saw him for about 9 games. But he looked like he didn't know what he was supposed to do out there last season. That's a little bit of an indictment on Brian Callahan. And if Cam Ward doesn't look good early on, I think that's going to be when the possibility of Brian Callahan being fired midseason comes out, is if Cam Ward doesn't look like a number one overall pick. Again, it's not going to fall on Cam Ward. It's not going to fall on Mike Borgonzi. It's going to fall on Brian Callahan.
Well, it's interesting. Like, I'm even looking back at a piece here that was on NFL.com in 2016. So you're talking about almost a decade ago at this point. And basically the point of it was, just because you draft a franchise quarterback, that does not mean that you've got job security as a head coach. And as you read through this, like, the point basically ended up being, if anything, it kind of speeds up your clock. Like, you better show some progress pretty early with the quarterback, because if you don't, the quarterback and the GM are going to be tied together. Like, the GM made the pick, and the quarterback, he's going to be the last one that gets blamed. Like, eventually, time runs out on the quarterback, and people blame the quarterback. Like, Marcus is a good example. They exhausted pretty much every option they could around here before finally they're just like, yeah, it's market. We just can't do it anymore. And Ryan Tannehill took over, and we know what happened. Like, you know, I'm reading this NFL.com piece from 2016, and it's talking about Wisenhunt, right? Like, Mariota got taken at number 2, and Wisenhunt was out less than half a season into Mariota's tenure. Now, look, if you were around for the Wisenhunt era and you're a Titans fan, it was horrible, and he did a horrible job. And he was a jerk about a lot of things, and that didn't help him. I mean, other than week ones where he was unbelievable, if you gave Ken Wisenhunt 6 months to prepare for a game, he was really good. Beyond that, the tenure went pretty poorly. So, like, I'm not saying that Ken Wisenhunt should have had more time here with the Titans, but go back and look at the examples over the last 10 years. There's a lot of high quarterbacks getting drafted and their coaches getting fired either that same year or the year right after. It happens a lot in the NFL.
And last year with Caleb Williams was the one that made the least sense. Everybody looked at that and said, why is Matt Eberflus going to be the head coach for Caleb Williams?
He should have been fired before Caleb Williams.
Right. Yeah. They should have known, like, hey, we got the number one pick. We're taking Caleb Williams. Let's go get somebody who's an offensive mind who can develop this quarterback. And no, we'll stick with Eberflus, who had – I mean, they weren't the worst team in the league the year they had the number one pick because they made the trade with the Panthers, but the year before they were, and they still weren't very good the year after. So that one made no sense. I think it makes sense to give Brian Callahan a chance here. He is supposed to be a quarterback guru.
Yep.
He's worked with a number one overall pick before in Joe Burrow, and I'm willing to give him a fair chance this year to develop Cam Ward. But like we said, the quarterback is going to get blamed last. Like Anthony Richardson right now, I think it's pretty fair to say that he's probably not going to be a very good NFL quarterback, but everybody else is going to take a fall before Anthony Richardson, except for Chris Ballard, apparently.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Like, either the quarterback is going to get blamed last, or he's got to be so bad where you're like, okay,
we messed up.
It may not matter who the coach is with this guy.
I think at this point, Chris Ballard and Anthony Richardson are tied together. If Richardson is not the guy, barring Daniel Jones being an MVP candidate this year, I think Chris Ballard's 9 lives are about to run out in Indianapolis too.
615-737-1025, our phone number. We'll take your thoughts on Brian Callahan and the Titans. Already some rolling in on the text line, which we will get to coming up next. Keep them coming, 615-737-1025. This week's Nashville's Best Deal is Red's Hot Chicken. Red's Hot Chicken on West End. Bring in the heat. Don't miss their hot chicken and waffles or the mac and cheese crunch wrap, which just sounds awesome. Grab a $30 gift card for only $15 while supplies last at thegamenashville.com/deals. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Join us tomorrow morning as we broadcast live at the Duncan Grand Reopening in Hermitage at 5205 Old Hickory Boulevard. Starting at 8 o'clock, the first 100 people in line will win free coffee for 100 days. Plus, 1025 The Game will have your chance for tickets to an upcoming Nashville concert as well. That's at Duncan tomorrow. Myself, along with Paul Kuharski, will be out there. Robbie and Rex Road brought to you by First Horizon. Big bank muscle, small bank hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get-it-all. We are live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Taking your thoughts on the Titans and Brian Callahan. Wes in Clarksville on the text line says, I still think they should have let the new GM decide the fate on Callahan. Should have let Borgonzi pick his coach, because at the end of the year, if things are bad, he can say, sorry, I didn't pick that coach. Matt from Camden says, if they do end up firing Callahan this season, I want him to go hire someone with some head coaching experience. I do not want to do the hot coordinator thing again. This is from Matt from Camden. It is funny how the pendulum swings in terms of what people are looking for when it comes to head coaches.
Yeah, and most of the good head coaches lately have been the hot coordinator. Like, you don't see a ton of retreads going and having success. Like, Dan Quinn had a great first year in Washington. That would be the example. But just before that, Washington hired Ron Rivera, and it was a disaster.
Yep.
So I would, and like Mike McCarthy with Dallas was not very good. I would say hot coordinator is still the way to go, but I think it's you need to swing the pendulum back a little bit towards what Mike Vrabel was. They went from, well, Mike Vrabel's, you know, salty and sarcastic, so let's go with the nice guy in Brian Callahan. I think you need something a little bit in the middle.
Gino says, if this was Madden franchise mode, I'd just sim this next season and look to see what coaches are available. That's how disinterested I am, and it sucks. Optimism or faith, whatever you want to call it, I don't have any of it. This is from Gino on the text line. I understand it, and it's been a rough go for Titans fans around here.
The Titans have the number one pick playing quarterback for them this year. Right?
I
last year, I totally would have understood that of, you know, Will Levis. As much hype as there was around Will Levis, he wasn't the number one pick in the draft.
There were plenty of people that did not like Will Levis around here heading into last year.
Right. Even if you don't think the Titans are going to be good this year, which I don't think they're going to be good this year, there's at least a reason to watch this year, because you have the number one overall pick playing quarterback for you. That's enough to get me to turn the TV on at the very least.
Well, yeah, look, that's – but to that point, as things stand right now, that's about the only thing I'm excited to watch for the
Tennessee
Titans.
Right, no, 100%.
Yeah, it's about it.
I do say if this was Madden franchise mode, I might sim defense and not watch that part. Yeah. Like, I'll watch Cam Ward play and then, you know, mute the TV when the defense comes on the field.
I guess to that point, the other thing I could be excited about is, like, do the Titans as a team reach, like, 16 sacks this year? Like, can they get a sack per game? Because, my goodness, I don't know who's going to get it.
I mean,
now, looking at the roster.
If you went just with the edge rushers, I wonder what the over-under on edge rusher sacks would be for the Titans this year with Jones, Key, Oladejo, and the other group of middling pass rushers they have there. I bet it would be low double digits.
Like, yeah, it's not going to be very
high.
Really, this whole discussion, I think this is one of those things, like, sometimes it's pretty black and white heading into a year, right? Like, sometimes you know with a head coach, man, if he doesn't make the playoffs this year, he's probably out. Or if they don't get to the divisional round this year or the conference championship, this guy could be out. I don't know if it's that simple with the Titans. Like, I'm with you. I don't know that the record matters that much in this, rather than what does the process look like with Cam Ward. Now, I also hear people that say, well, if things are going well enough with Cam Ward and you feel like he's making significant progress throughout the year, then that should reflect in your record at the end of it. And I do agree with that to some degree. Like, if you're getting good quarterback play, that should affect your record. I mean, think about last year's team. You know, last year's Titans roster, not very good. Now, this year's Titans roster, also not very good. But think about how many more games they would have won last year had they gotten league average quarterback play. I mean, I could think of at least two, maybe three. So they're not a playoff team or anything like that. But you're talking about probably six wins instead of three. So this year, if Cam Ward is a league average quarterback, it's hard. I guess what I'm saying is it's hard for me to imagine them seeing everything they want to see out of Cam Ward and the progress that they want to see from Brian Callahan to Cam Ward and this team going 3-14 again. It's hard for me to get there that would be the case, unless the defense is just a total sieve, and they can't stop anybody out there.
I just think you can't set an arbitrary win number and say, if Brian Callahan doesn't win 8 games this year, he's got to be gone.
That I agree with.
I think there could be a 6-11 season if you're competitive. Like, there's a difference between a 6-11 season where every time you play a good team, you get blown out, or a 6-11 season where, man, Cam Ward, he's beaten the teams he should. He's competitive against the teams that are playoff teams. But, you know, the team's just not good enough to win some of those games yet. There's a difference between that 6-11 and maybe you beat the Saints, the Browns, you win a couple division games, and then get blown out by everybody else. I think there's no just random win number that you could put and say, Brian Callahan needs to win this many games. You can't just box score watch on this season. You've got to see the progress from Cam Ward. And if at the end of the year you're seeing Cam Ward play some of his best football November, December, and it looks like he is truly seeing the game slow down,
yeah,
then I think you have to give Brian Callahan some props and at least give him another season.
Well, to that point, you mentioned being competitive. You know, obviously 3-14 is not very competitive, but in that 3-14, they had 7 games last year where they lost by 10 or more points.
Right.
That's hard to do in the NFL.
Yeah.
Like, it's hard to just get blasted every week in the NFL. And so if that's the case again, then I think your decision's made for you.
Right.
Like, there's, yeah, the Titans roster needs a lot of work. You look at edge rusher right now, and it's not very encouraging. And, you know, if L'Jarius Sneed either can't play due to injury or can't play due to legal situations, the defense could be really bad. Like, it could be very bad this year. Offensively, I hope they fix the offensive line. I think I'm probably with most Titans fans that just say, I'll believe it when I see it, that they fixed the offensive line.
It's got to be better, right?
I'm looking at wide receiver, and it's Calvin Ridley and then a bunch of guys. Like, Tyler Lockett is 33 in September. He's not going to be anywhere close to the same Tyler Lockett that he was in Seattle in the prime of his career. Now, could he give you 49 catches for 600 yards, which is what he gave Seattle last year? I'd sign up for that right now if I were the Titans. That's fine. I'm excited about Io Manor. I'm excited about Gunnar Helm. But you're talking about rookies, and you're talking about, you know, fourth-round rookies at that.
Right.
So how much is realistic to expect from those guys? So it's a long way of me saying there's still a ton of holes on the roster. But if you're just getting destroyed every week and you lose 7 games again this year by 10 or more points,
then there's no question.
Then I think that tells you all you need to know about the coach.
I think the first 2 games – they're not going to decide Callahan's fate, but I think it's going to give you a decent idea of what this team is going to be. And it's funny, we had people texting me and Connor on the text line a couple weeks ago saying that the Titans should bench Cam Ward for the first 2 games because the Broncos and Rams are hard opponents, which is just absolutely ridiculous to me.
I would not do that.
But I think you're going to learn a lot from those first 2 games because those Broncos and Rams, those are not only playoff teams from last year, but they're playoff teams that I think universally are expected to be better this year.
Yep.
And if you get blown out in Denver, come home and get blown out by the Rams, I think you're going to start to see the gears start going in the wheels going to start to roll on Callahan possibly being fired. But even if you start 0-2 in those games and Cam Ward's got you with a chance to go win the game in the last 2 minutes and maybe comes up just short, or you give up a touchdown at the end to lose it, then I think there's a big difference there. Watching those first 2 games and seeing how Cam Ward performs and seeing how Brian Callahan looks in his second year as the head coach and play caller, I think is going to give you at least a sneak peek at what this season's going to be.
Couple more thoughts I want to get to on the Brian Callahan front. We'll do that coming up next. Plus, we will get back into the Predators and the NHL draft, all that coming up. Robbie and Rex Row, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Get out of that summer heat for craft brews, food, games, and entertainment at the 2025 Nashville Predators Craft Beer Festival, which is this Saturday at Bridgestone Arena. For more details, visit thegamenashville.com/events. I have been to that. It's always a fun time.
It sounds great.
And, you know, frankly, with how hot it's been this week, not a bad place to go on
Saturday.
True. Make sure you go check that out. 615-737-1025. Speaking of the Predators, we will get back into the Predators and some thoughts on the NHL draft here in just a few minutes. A couple other things I want to get to on the Callahan front, though, that I think are going to be really interesting. how different is the offense this year? Or maybe more accurately, how much more of the offense are we able to see this year? Because I think, Jake, we hit a point last year where it became pretty clear pretty early that, number one, the offensive line could not really hold up in pass protection. So some of those deeper concepts, routes that you want to run down the field, maybe with a guy like Ridley, you couldn't do a lot of, because if you did, Will Levis was going to end up on his back. And then, two, as the season went on, as the first game went on, it became more and more clear that you really could not trust Will Levis with his decision-making. And there's a lot that went into that. I think some of it was just not seeing what you need to see with the defense. Some of it was, I think, a little bit of panic at times in the pocket and not having a great pocket presence, which hopefully Cam Ward has more of this year. So, you know, a lot of things went wrong last year. I didn't really walk away having a great feel for exactly how Brian Callahan did as a play caller and exactly what his offense, when running at full capacity, could look like, because there were so many deficiencies offensively that I think it was hard to get a real good gauge for it. We'll see if that's any better this year. I mean, I'm with you. The offense, there's no excuse for the offensive line to not be better this year. Like, it, I'm not saying it's got to be top 10 in the league, but there's no excuse with the investment level that they've got in that thing. You go out, you get Dan Moore, you've got Bill Callahan in year two, Latham moving to the right side, which is where he played in college. There's no excuse for that offensive line to not be significantly better than it was a year ago. If it's not, you got a big problem, and that by itself is probably enough to fire the coach and the whole staff at that point. But then the question becomes, all right, let's say the offensive line is better. Well, how much better is Cam Ward? As a rookie, is he doing a good job of diagnosing what he sees out there defensively? What's his pocket presence look like in the NFL? There is a big difference between the NFL and college football and what you're seeing, what you're dealing with. So all that still is a big question mark to me. And if you get improvements on both of those things, how does that affect Brian Callahan as a play caller? How does that affect what we see offensively from him? Because I never thought we got a great answer to that last year.
Yeah, Brian Callahan, he was limited by his personnel, for sure. I don't think he was able to call the offense that in an ideal world he would like to. And you're right, like, it should be better this year. The offensive line, you look at the investment that they've made at all of those spots. $20 million a year in Dan Moore. 11th overall pick on Skoronski. Was it the highest paid center?
Yes.
Yeah.
And we'll see when he's back.
If Cushenberry's healthy. Zeitler is a former All-Pro. And the 7th overall pick on Latham. You can't really invest all that much more in the offensive line than the Titans have. So if it's not better, then the evaluation has to be questioned of why are we spending so much of our resources on bad players on the offensive line. Cam Ward, you're right. We don't know what he's going to look like against NFL defenses, but you would think that the panic issues that Will Levis had won't be an issue for Cam Ward. Like, that's the one thing that most scouts would say is that dude's always calm back there. So I don't think you'll have to worry about that. I think we will get a better idea of what Brian Callahan can do as a play caller, at least in my mind. And I don't feel like I saw a whole lot of complaints about Brian Callahan's play calling last year. Like,
no, the people were too busy complaining about everything with the Titans last year. Focusing on the play call.
There was way more problems than the play calling last year. But I think this year, if the offensive line is better, if Cam Ward is the guy that they hope he is, that is going to be the next piece that we start to look at, is can Brian Callahan be an effective play caller while being an effective head coach? Because it is tough to do both of those things. And we did see that be a problem at times where it felt like Brian Callahan was a little bit, treading water when it came to being a head coach in his first year while trying to be a play caller. Hopefully that slows down for him in year two, and we'll see what he can do as a play caller. But that is going to be a storyline this year. If the offensive line is improved, what can Brian Callahan do when his quarterback actually has time to throw?
So we brought up the NHL draft earlier, and Scott Wheeler was on with DVD yesterday and had some interesting comments about Porter Martone, James Hagans, and kind of what he was hearing there. And in his mock draft, the last mock draft that he did, he had the Predators taking Porter Martone, the winger, at number five. Wheeler has come out with a piece this morning at The Athletic, and it's not a mock draft, but it is kind of the latest of what he's hearing the day before the draft. And I'll just read to you the little part about James Hagans. It says, a little more than a year ago, Hagans set the U18 World Singles Tournament points record with 22 in just 7 games in Finland and entered the summer before his draft year as the front runner to be the number one pick. Now I'm starting to get the sense that he's not going to be a top 5 pick. As things stand right now, I don't think the Sharks, Blackhawks, or Mammoth take him at 2, 3, or 4. And while I think he makes a lot of sense for the Preds at number 5, and I would take him there, they've shown a lot of interest in Martone throughout this year, and I think he's likely their selection if he's there. If Martone goes before the Preds pick at number 5, which is a real possibility, I could see Nashville circle back to Hagans. But the chalk version that I've got in my head right now has Hagans going number 6 or number 7 to the Flyers or the Bruins. That's the latest from Scott Wheeler this morning. So what do you make of that when you hear that?
It's interesting. I mean, it is crazy to think that James Hagans, even when the draft lottery happened, it felt like he was the third guy behind Schaefer and Misa, and now that's changed, and he's now, it feels kind of safe to say he is going to be there for the Preds at 5. I think it has to be a large gap between Martone and Hagans for the Predators to take Martone, and if that is what they do, then clearly Barry Trotz likes Martone a lot, but also if Martone's not there and they take Hagans, is Hagans really that far down on their draft board?
Right.
There's a lot of questions that come from that of if the gap does have to be big to go winger over center, how big is the gap if you take Hagans as soon as Martone comes off the board?
I mean, look, if you want to take Barry Trotz 100% at his word, what he said the other day, here's the couple things that I walked away with. He brought up a couple of times how he thinks basically prospects 3 through 8 are pretty similar.
Yeah.
Not in terms of the way that they play, but the talent level, all that. And he also said that his preference would be to draft a centerman over a winger. So if you're just going purely off that, it's hard to imagine them drafting Porter Martone. Like if you believe that he thinks that most of those prospects 3 through 8 are similar and that he would rather have a center than a winger, then that doesn't seem like that adds up to Porter Martone to me. Wheeler's also just not making stuff up. Like, Wheeler has clearly heard that the Predators really like Porter Martone. I think one thing that's got to be factored into all this, and you could ask this question from the Trotz point of view, and you could ask it the question as to, like, what exactly Wheeler is being told and by who. How much gamesmanship is going on with all this, with being, you know, a couple days out from the draft when Wheeler heard some of this stuff, and now in this case, one day out from the NHL draft?
It does feel like there is some sort of smokescreen being played here, whether that's what the Preds are saying outwardly or what they're telling insiders like Scott Wheeler. It is a little bit confusing, and I'm wondering if maybe Barry Trotz thinks that Porter Martone isn't going to be there at 5.
Oh, and he may not be.
Because that seems like the most likely scenario is that, yeah, they want to take a center, and they don't think Martone's going to be there at 5, so they will take a center. I don't know.
Well, it's interesting that, you know, I think we all know who's going number one. I'd be really surprised if it's not Schaefer, the defenseman, at number one. It's interesting that Wheeler says he doesn't think the Sharks, Blackhawks, or Mammoth are taking Hagans at 2, 3, or 4. What about Martone? That would be my question. Because,
right.
And look, we keep talking about Martone and Hagans. Nobody knows that that's who the Predators are boiling it down to. They may be saying, yeah, y'all go ahead and take Porter Martone or James Hagans because we really like Brady Martin, and that's who we're taking. That's our guy, and Brady Martin's our pick. I have no idea. I have no clue.
We're not going to know until the Preds make the pick tomorrow night.
Which, exactly.
And I'm wondering, you know, that I think the easy takeaway when Barry Trotz says 3 through 8 in the terms of those prospects is that you guess Schaefer and Misa are 1 and 2. Maybe he's putting Martone in that group, and maybe, like, Misa would be in the 3 through 8. I don't know. I guess we won't find out until tomorrow.
615-737-1025, our phone number. We'll go rapid fire next. Couple of your thoughts to get to on the Titans and the Preds. Keep them coming. 615-737-1025. Robbie and Rexrobe, 1025-1063, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, brought to you by First Horizon, Big Bank Muscle, Small Bank Hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. Live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating and Air Conditioning, Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Taking your thoughts on the Titans and the Preds on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We've talked a lot today about Porter Martone and James Hagans and who the Predators could draft at number five. We have not brought up Roger McQueen a whole lot, who we have talked about on this show before. It looks like he's probably going to be more in like that 8-12 kind of range. But Wes from Hermitage wondering if Lightning McQueen is worth the hype
Ka-chow.
In this draft.
Draft him immediately. It's the greatest movie in history, Robbie.
It's a great film. There's no doubt about that. To answer the question, I don't know. He's 6'5". The size is great. The skill level is really good. I'm not going to sit here and act like I've watched Roger McQueen play a ton of hockey, but I have seen some, and I understand the fascination with him. The back injury, I think, scares some people, which is why he is slotted where he is in the draft process. Had he been completely healthy, there are some that think he would be in the conversation to be the number one overall pick. There are some that think that even if he's completely healthy, his game's inconsistent enough to the point where he'd still be probably in the same range he is right now. So I guess that question really just depends on who you ask when it comes to Roger McQueen.
Right. I would just be excited, just like Connor, to have Lightning McQueen in Nashville. I can already imagine Max Herz letting out a mean ka-chow after a goal.
He's got to wear 95 if he gets here, though.
Yeah, that is true.
He has to.
That's a good point.
Yeah. No, that'd be good. Just for the goal call for Max, I think he would kill a ka-chow if it was Roger McQueen. But I do think, again, I said this on Monday or Tuesday, based on what I've seen, that is the nightmare scenario for Preds fans. It doesn't seem like they have to worry about that.
I don't think he's going to be in the fold.
Right. There hasn't been a whole lot of smoke about him being in the conversation at number five. So I think Preds fans can sleep easily tonight knowing that Lightning will not be coming to Nashville.
One texter says, Preds draft thought, is there a scenario you would trade down two or three spots? For me, if Schaefer, Misa, Frondell, and Hagans are all gone, I'd be willing to trade down for the right package. Philly and Boston are reported to like the same players. By the same vein, if Pittsburgh wanted to trade up, would you be willing to do that for the right package that includes 11 and 12? I would find that tempting with the thought of taking, you know, McQueen kind of in that mix as well. To answer the question, I would not do that. Like, top five picks don't grow on trees, and I would just if the situation comes up where Schaefer, Misa, Frondell, and Hagans are all gone, well, then I would probably just take either Denoyer or Martone at that point would be the way that I would go.
And if you're trading back, unless you're getting an NHL player in that trade, which you wouldn't get a significant NHL player to move back from 5 to 10, you're just picking up more draft assets, and the Preds really don't need more draft assets. So I think you just stick and pick at five.
I think they will stick and pick at five. Now, we've also had the question of, can they move up? It's not totally impossible. We are kind of running out of time for that. I mean, the draft is tomorrow. So, you know, most of the time these deals don't come together on the draft floor,
right,
which, by the way, they're not at this year.
While they're on the clock.
Yeah, they're all decentralized. So, I mean, these conversations, I'm sure, have been going on for a while. I mean, look, Barry Trotz said that people are trying to move around, and there's just not a whole lot of willingness to listen right now in the top five. So does that change between now and the draft tomorrow? Maybe. I mean, my guess is they're picking at five, and they're going to pick at five, and we'll see who it ends up being. Like, the bigger question is, are they going to be picking later in the first round? Are they going to use both of those picks? Are they going to try to package those as a trade? We're seeing some trades rolling in the NHL. Buffalo made another one with Utah last night. You know, I think it was Ken Holland, who is the general manager in L.A., who said yesterday that he thinks it could get pretty busy here in the next couple of days. So does that happen? I mean, Evander Kane got traded from the Oilers to the Canucks yesterday. So over the next 24 to 48 hours, are there a ton of trades around the league? If so, do the Predators get involved in that? Like, there's a lot that can, and I think will happen between now and by the time Saturday rolls around and the second part of that draft commences.
This is going to be a very interesting 36 hours, 48 hours for the Predators, because, like we said, I don't think there's any reason you trade out of five. But 23 and 26, Alex Doherty seemed to be of the mindset that they will make those picks. I'm less
of that mindset.
Yeah, I think that they could end up wheeling and dealing those for something. So it'll be interesting. Lots of big moves to be made for the Preds.
Drew on the Titans front says, I know I'm optimistic to a fault and definitely don't want to get my hopes up. I think the Titans are going to be okay. I don't expect a Super Bowl win, but I do see them winning games and being an above 500 team. I believe the GM is going to build a better team than we think. I also believe if our management and owner don't ruin Cam Ward, then we'll make all of these games super competitive. Drew says, I know you guys are talking about hockey, but you guys' pessimism of my boys is rubbing me the wrong way. Well, long term, we'll see. I think this team this year being an over 500 team is a very lofty goal for the Tennessee Titans. It's not impossible. We've seen teams the last 2 years come out of nowhere and be over 500, and in Washington's case, get to the NFC title game last year. So it's not impossible, but it is lofty.
Things could change, and you could have players step up that you weren't expecting a ton from, which makes you a better team.
Maybe Femi Iladejo is Javon Kirsch reincarnated.
Right, and maybe Gunnar Helm is George Kittle. But the way I don't see 9 wins on this schedule right now. Jared had the whole thing with Barry Trotz about, are you playing for 2026 or 2029 with the Preds? I think the Titans are playing for 2027. Like,
I
that's
agree.
2027, they want to be towards the top of the AFC when that new stadium opens. So that is what they're building toward. That's why you draft a project like Femi Iladejo in the second round. That's why you draft a guy who maybe slipped in Winston in the third round because of an injury. You're not building to be winning the AFC South this year. You're looking to win the AFC South in 2027.
I would agree with that, and I think based on where their roster is, it's hard to do anything really but that at this point. Like, we'll see if they fix the offensive line. My guess is, and we'll see what Io Manor and DK bring to the table, but my guess is they're probably still another piece or two away at wide receiver that's going to come later in the draft, either next year or the year after that, that's going to be – 5 years from now, Cam Ward works out, will be Cam Ward's primary pass catcher. Will be somebody that's probably not on the roster yet, if I had to guess. No disrespect to Io Manor or DK. We'll see.
You need to spend early round picks on wide receiver, pass rusher, and cornerback in the next couple years.
Correct.
And then maybe the team starts to look a little bit different.
Correct. Jake, it's been fun this week, man.
It's been
appreciate
a great
you
week.
Having us in.
Yeah, excited to fill in. I hope you enjoy PK tomorrow.
PK will be with me tomorrow. We're going to be out at Duncan in Hermitage for the grand reopening of that. And remember, starting at 8 o'clock, the first 100 people that are in line for that will have free coffee for 100 days. Plus, we're going to have your chances to win tickets to an upcoming concert as well. So PK and I will be out at Duncan at 5205 Old Hickory Boulevard tomorrow morning. So looking forward to seeing you out there. That does it for us today. Chasing Big Joe is coming up next. You're listening to 102.5, 106.3 The Game.